Helen lived then in a farmhouse near Boston. In 1905, Annie Sullivan had married John Macy, and they shared the house with her. Old friends visited them, Helen's classmates from college, her sister Mildred, her mother. Each day, Helen struggled at improving her voice so that she might lecture as well as write. In her book, Midstream, she tells of that first lecture. I wonder if anyone has ever made his appearance upon the platform with keener anguish. Terror invaded my flesh. My mind froze. My heart stopped beating. I kept repeating, what shall I do? With outer calm, she and Annie went on the platform. She spoke. Annie interpreted for her, and together they showed how Helen had learned to speak. The audience sat in awed wonder. It was the beginning of a 5-year lecture tour. Mail poured in. They soon needed a secretary, and were fortunate in finding a young woman from Scotland, Polly Thompson. 1919 saw the three of them in Hollywood, where Helen had agreed to make a picture. They were welcomed by the budding industry's great, Charlie Chaplin, Douglas Fairbanks, and Mary Pickford. In those days, the cameraman still had his cap on backwards, and the director still wore riding breeches. The movie was called Deliverance. Some of you may remember it. With the exception of a manufactured subplot to provide romance and an elaborate Hollywood attempt at symbolism, this picture was a forerunner of the documentary film. It showed how Helen could type and write Braille. How she could fix her own hair. And how she could dance. It showed her with her mother and with her brother, Philip Skeller. It showed Helen taking her first aeroplane ride. Perilous it looked, and perilous it was. The flight almost ended in a crash. And then, of course, the movie climaxed with a typical Hollywood spectacle finish. People who were shocked that Helen would make a movie were aghast at her next step. Vaudeville. For 2 years, Helen, Annie, and Polly trooped the vaudeville circuit with tumblers, midgets, dance acts, and plain seals. A part of their act was later filmed with sound. It is the only existing record of Annie Sullivan's voice.
When I saw Helen Keller first, she was 6 years and 8 months old. She had been blind and deaf and mute since her 19th month as the result of an illness. She had no way of communicating with those around her except a few imitative signs that she had made for herself. A push man's go and a pull man's come and so on. She had observed that we did not use the hands when we were talking to each other. And I let her see by putting her hand on my face how we talked with our mouths. She felt the vibration of the spoken word. Instantly, she spelled, I want to talk with my mouth. That seemed impossible. But after experimenting for a time, we found that placing her hand in this position, the thumb resting on the throat, right at the larynx, the first finger on the lips, the second on the nose, we found that she could feel the vibration of spoken words. For instance, the throat, she feels the G, the hard G, G. And on the lips, she feels the, and the K sound. On the lips, she feels the B, and the T. And the, with the second finger on the nose, the nasal sounds, the N, the M. The first word she learned to articulate was the little word it. With the hand in this position, I made the vowel I. She felt it. I. Then I made the T. She feels it with the finger on her lips, on my lips. Then I put the two letters together to form the word it. And the first word was learned. After her seventh lesson, she was able to speak the sentence word by word. I am not. Dumb now.
Helen's efforts were awarded. She brought the country to a new awareness. In city and state arose schools and homes for the blind and deaf, many attributable to the zealous work of Helen Keller. She was recognized not just as a wonder, but as a wonder worker. The great men and women of her time wished to meet and know her. She made Coolidge smile. President and Mrs. Hoover welcomed her to the White House with our fellow members of the first World Conference for the Blind. Franklin Delano Roosevelt conferred with her twice at the White House and was her staunch friend in the rehabilitation of the handicapped. Writers wondered at her. Artists sculpted her. Poets drew inspiration from her. Like all the great, she was asked to launch a ship. She was made an Indian. Her name, White Plume. But always the work went on, an appeal to the American children to guard their eyes, an appeal before Congress with Representative Ruth Platt for more libraries of Braille books, more nurseries for blind children like the one she'd visited in Detroit and in London. In the early 1930s, Annie Sullivan's health began to fail, and she could travel with Helen no longer. On October 20th, 1936, Helen's teacher, companion, and beloved friend for nearly 50 years, Anne Sullivan Macy, died. Polly Thompson, warm, devoted, well-trained for this unique job, took Annie's place at Helen's side. The war years found Helen and Polly going up and down the endless corridors of our veterans' hospitals. Just as later, they visit the amputees, the blind, and the sick back from Korea. Meeting Helen, seeing what she has made of her life, helps give them the courage to reshape their own. She was sighted at the close of the war.
And to you, Miss Keller, we present this scroll for being the outstanding woman in social service work, and who is an inspiration not only to the handicapped, but to all of us for your courage and indomitable will.
The story of Helen's life, told and retold for more than 60 years, has become a legend that belongs to the world. You may already have heard it. She was born in 1880 in this little house in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the eldest child of Captain Arthur H. Keller of Swiss descent and Kate Adams Keller of the Adams family in Massachusetts. Born a normal, healthy baby, she had an illness at 19 months that left her blind, deaf, and mute. From then until she was nearly 7, she lived in darkness and silence, alone beyond human reach, unaware, untaught. In 1886, Helen's mother read a travel book by an English novelist. The author spoke of a school where a deaf, blind girl had been taught to read and write. From this school came Helen's liberator, young Anne Mansfield Sullivan. Annie Sullivan, herself nearly blind as a child, her vision never fully restored, dedicated the experience of her own dark childhood to the task of Helen's enlightenment. Working small, patient miracles, she broke at last through the darkness and silence of Helen's life and led Helen Keller into realizing that around her was another world, unseen, unimagined. A world of sight and sound where communication was possible between human beings by speaking and writing. Once Helen's quick intelligence was freed, it leapt from achievement to achievement. Within 3 months, she had written in pencil her first letter. At 9, she began a correspondence with a great preacher, Phillips Brooks. At 10, she could call herself a published writer. People throughout the land became interested in her progress. Among them, Mark Twain, who considered Helen Keller and Napoleon the two most interesting figures of the 19th century. Alexander Graham Bell, inventor of the telephone, encouraged Annie Sullivan in her plans for Helen's schooling. With Annie always beside her, finger-spelling every lesson into her hand, Helen went to school. From Annie's hand to Helen's flowed the classroom lectures. She learned to read in 5 languages. With pins and wires on a velvet cushion, she even mastered geometry. On June 28, 1904, Helen Keller graduated cum laude from Radcliffe College. No one had ever so risen above such handicaps. Blind, deaf, but no longer mute, she was ready to face the world. During college, she had written The Story of My Life. Now she began writing articles and books about the needs of the deaf and the blind. She also wrote a poem in blank verse. Come, walk with me, and I will tell what I have read in this scroll of stone. I will spell out this writing on hill and meadow. It is a chronicle wrought by praying workmen, the forefathers of our nation. Leagues upon leagues of sealed history, awaiting an interpreter.